From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. Undocumented immigrants may be getting counted in the 2020 census, but yesterday, President Trump issued a memorandum that attempts to prevent undocumented immigrants from being counted when congressional seats are reapportioned next year. It's the latest effort in the ongoing political battle over the 2020 census. So this hour On Point, we're going to take a look at that, congressional seats, and what's happening with the 2020 census. And joining us is Hansi Lo Wong. He's national correspondent covering the 2020 census for NPR. Hansi, welcome back to On Point.
Thank you, Meghna.
Now, first of all, I actually have to start by correcting myself. I hate it when I make mistakes right here at the top, but I believe the president issued this memorandum on Tuesday, not Wednesday. Is that right, Hansi?
That's right. It was on Tuesday.
Okay, good. So we got to get all of our facts right, including dates. So this memorandum by the president was issued this week on Tuesday. What did it say?
This memorandum directs the Commerce Secretary, who oversees the Census Bureau and by law is required to deliver the results of the 2020 census to the president. It directs the Commerce Secretary when that delivery happens of those results. The president has requested that there would include that report includes information that would allow the president to exclude unauthorized immigrants from the apportionment count, from the census numbers used to determine how many seats in the House of Representatives each state gets based on their latest population counts. And this is something that, if the president moves forward with this, it goes against more than 200 years of precedent.
200 years of precedent, because in the Constitution it says that the power to do the count lies only with Congress.
Congress has the final authority, according to Article 1, Section 2 of the U.S. Constitution. Article 1, Section 2, the fifth sentence of the Constitution, also spells out who should be counted in the census, and the original language refers to persons. There's no mention of citizens, for example. And that original language was amended by the 14th Amendment, passed after the Civil War, to end the counting of an enslaved person as three-fifths of a person. And now we are following the 14th Amendment, which says the counting of the whole number of persons in each state in order to reapportion seats in Congress once every 10 years.
Huh. So we're going to dig in more into the constitutionality of what the president is writing in this memo. But first of all, I mean, almost on a technical point here, Hansi, is this even possible to do if they are not collecting citizenship information in the census?
That's really unclear at this point. You know, I was listening in on a hearing on a census-related lawsuit. This is about citizenship data that the Trump administration is trying to get the Census Bureau to produce. And on that hearing, a Justice Department attorney told a federal judge that it is unclear that the Trump administration doesn't have a set methodology for determining an authorized immigrant count in order to carry out President Trump's memo. And they don't have all the government records that they would possibly need in order to determine this count, because we have to remember the census forms, not only do they not include a question about citizenship, because the Supreme Court and lower courts blocked that last year, so no citizenship question, but it also does not include any question about a person's immigration status. So the Census Bureau is collecting information, not knowing who is a citizen or not, and what a person's immigration status is.
So what's the point then here of this? What is the administration actually trying to do? Because inevitably, if it hasn't already ended up in court, I presume, Hansi, that this move by the administration will end up in court. Or can Congress just kind of swat it down because they'll just claim the constitutional authority that they ostensibly have?
Well, I am on watch for a flood of litigation, lawsuits. Really could be any hour today. It could be later this week because a number of civil rights groups, some state attorneys general, have signaled that they are ready to take legal action, take this issue to court. They're calling this an unconstitutional move by the president. And so we'll see where that lands. What is the point of this? Well, the Trump administration says they want to exclude unauthorized immigrants from the apportionment count. That's what they're saying. But the effect of this by putting out this memo. In the final months of the census, in terms of counting, the Census Bureau just has a few months left to try to complete a count of every person living in the country. And right now, there nationwide, there's roughly 4 out of 10 homes, households that have not been counted yet. And they are disproportionately, based on historical data, they are more than likely to be representative of historically undercounted groups, which includes immigrants, unauthorized immigrants, as well as people of color who have high levels of distrust of sharing their personal information with the government. And to have this memo come out likely will have a chilling effect on folks who are really worried, even though there are federal laws that say that a person's information that they provide to the Census Bureau, personally identifiable information, must be kept confidential for 72 years. And that information that identifies individuals, cannot be used against an individual. But the question is, will the public, especially those who have not participated in the census yet, will they trust that the Trump administration will uphold those laws?
So you said 4 in 10 households have yet to be counted, and we're in
roughly
late July now?
Roughly nationwide, that's average. And if you take a look at certain states, certain communities, it's a much lower response rate, self-response rate.
Is that normal at this point in the census calendar in previous counts?
With a lot of things right now because of the pandemic, it's really hard to say what is normal. Regarding the self-response rate, we are at unprecedented territory. In 2010, people were not allowed to really respond on their own at this point. And originally, this should be the final days of door knocking for the 2020 census. That was the Census Bureau's plan. Instead, we're at a point where the Census Bureau has only just started door knocking in just a few communities, and it's not going to start nationwide until August 11th. So they are behind schedule because of the pandemic.
Wow. Every show, no matter what it's about, there's the pandemic as a major force in upending normative expectations for American life. Well, let's listen to a little bit of how Democratic members of Congress have responded to the president's memorandum. Here, Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer on Tuesday.
This order isn't worth the paper it's printed on and will be struck down by the courts. Attempting to weaponize the census for political gain is yet another racially driven attack by a president and an administration that wrongly views immigrants as the enemy when they are a vital part of our society.
That's Senator Chuck Schumer earlier this week. Well, Hansi, stand by for just a moment because I want to now bring in Thomas Sines. He joins us from Los Angeles, California. He's president of the Mexican American Legal Defense and Educational Fund. And again, he joins us from L.A. Thomas Sines, welcome to On Point.
Thank you.
So first of all, your initial response to the president's memo that he released on Tuesday.
Plainly unconstitutional. It will be struck down in court. In fact, it's already being litigated. It was in litigation even before he made his announcement. It's clearly intended to be a dog whistle to white nationalists because it is, as Senator Schumer just indicated, one more salvo in the president's constant assault on the Latino community, an attempt to reduce the growing political power of the Latino community.
Do you see, what do you think of this parallel? Because one of the initial things that I thought of when Hansi broke this news on Tuesday was that, well, with the initial Muslim ban that the president signed right out of the gate of his presidency, that was struck down in various forms multiple times by federal courts until the administration landed on a version that passed legal muster. Could that be possible in this case, Thomas?
No. The Constitution's apportionment clause, particularly after its amendment is post-Civil War in the 14th Amendment, is very clear that all persons in a state are to be counted through an actual enumeration in allocating the seats in the House of Representatives. This is as clear a constitutional provision as you could have. Moreover, the Supreme Court has repeatedly interpreted the word person in the Constitution and even specifically in the 14th Amendment as meaning what it says. All persons means all persons. There's no distinction based on your immigration status, your citizenship, or any other attribute.
Well, Hansi, let me turn back to you here, though, because so let's widen the lens a little bit, because this question of who should be counted, not just a citizenship question, but who should be counted, there's actually legal cases going on right now about that, particularly in Alabama. Can you set that up for us? What's happening in Alabama?
Well, that's the case that Thomas Sines was just referring to. His organization, Mexican American Legal Defense and Educational Fund, has stepped in to defend the Census Bureau's longstanding policy to include unauthorized immigrants in the apportionment count, according to the Census Bureau's interpretation of the Constitution. And that case right now, filed in 2018, was filed by the state of Alabama, as well as Representative Mo Brooks, a Republican from that state, who we'll hear from a little bit later in the program. They are saying they do not want to see Alabama lose a seat in the House of Representatives after the 2020 census. They say they think that might happen if unauthorized immigrants are included in the apportionment count. And they are trying to challenge and get a federal judge to strike down and enforce the Census Bureau to change its criteria for determining who should count in the apportionment count. And that is an ongoing lawsuit that not only MALDEF has stepped in, also you have a coalition of states led by New York, as well as some other cities and other local governments. And they have all stepped in because they do not believe that the Trump administration's attorneys at the Justice Department are going to fully defend the Census Bureau's policy. It's a complicated case because Alabama is actually suing the Trump administration, and the Trump administration has to, you know, through the Census Bureau, has taken a policy to include unauthorized immigrants. But as of this week, President Trump seems to be signaling the Trump administration has changed its policy and does not believe that unauthorized immigrants should be included in the apportionment count. And so it's very complicated.
Okay, so we're going to dive more into this Alabama case when we come back, as you've said. So we are talking about the Trump administration, about the 2020 census and congressional seats as well. We'll be right back. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/onpoint. That's Indeed.com/onpoint. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We are talking this hour about President Trump's memorandum this week calling for undocumented immigrants to be restricted from counting towards House representation, meaning the apportionment of congressional seats. And we're joined today by Hansi Lo Wong. He covers the 2020 census exhaustively, I should say, for NPR. Thomas Sines is also with us. He's president of the Mexican American Legal Defense and Education Fund. Now, before the break, we began talking about this really interesting case in Alabama. That is, it's a federal case that's asking for undocumented immigrants to not be counted in Alabama's case, toward those congressional seats. So joining us now is Representative Mo Brooks. He is a Republican representative for Alabama's 5th Congressional District, and he is a co-plaintiff in this Alabama reapportionment case. Representative Brooks, welcome to the program.
My pleasure.
So give us the argument here that you're laying out. Why should undocumented immigrants in Alabama not be counted towards the numbers needed to reapportion seats in Congress?
Well, just to be clear, the United States Code refers to them as aliens, and their status is illegal. So technically, under the law, they're illegal aliens. But I understand how those that are on the left side tend to want to give them a nicer name, one that is different from what the law states that the proper name is. But having said that, it's the 14th Amendment. We've got an equal protection clause in the United States Constitution in the 14th Amendment. And that 14th Amendment amends all preceding parts of the United States Constitution. And a subpart of the Equal Protection Clause is what we call one man, one vote principles, where everybody has an obligation, all levels of government, to ensure that a citizen's votes for different positions, elected positions, have equal weight. In this case, it's votes for the United States Congress and President of the United States. And if you include illegal aliens in the reapportionment count part of the United States Census, then what you are doing is violating the Equal Protection Clause by giving some American citizens more power and influence over the election of congressmen and senators because they have fewer citizens in those districts in which they vote. And so if you believe in the Equal Protection Clause and one man, one vote principles of the United States Constitution and 14th Amendment, then you should not count illegal aliens in the part of the count that relates to the distribution of political power, i.e. how many congressmen each state has and how many electoral college votes you have for the election of the President of the United States.
So, first of all, to just a follow-up question here, to your point about undocumented immigrants, and as you refer to them, illegal aliens, honestly,
sure, neither
nomenclature matters because the Constitution of the United States regarding the count that the census is supposed to undertake every 10 years simply says persons. It says persons. There's no designation to regarding their civil status in the United States. It says persons. So does that edict from the Constitution not apply here? Is that what you're saying?
When you're defining the word persons, you also have to understand that there are exceptions to the word persons. By way of example, we're not going to count foreigners who are in the United States lawfully when they work at various embassies, part of the ambassadorial staff. That's just an example of one set of persons who are in the United States, and they're in the United States legally, but they are not counted for the purposes of conducting the United States Census. So it's not 100% all human beings. There are exceptions to that, but you also have to take into account the weight and power of the 14th Amendment. And which is going to trump here? Are we going to go with your rather expansive definition of the word persons, which, by the way, historically has many different meanings, or are we going to give weight and power to the Equal Protection Clause of the United States Constitution and the one man, one vote principles on which our republic has been based ever since the Supreme Court intervened and said you have to start trying to equalize the influence of voters as they elect these different positions? By way of example, when I was in the state legislature, we had redistricting. When I was on the county commission, we had redistricting. As a member of the United States Congress, we had redistricting. And we had absolute mandates that we had to make those districts as even as possible from a population perspective in order to ensure that no citizen's vote was worth more than another citizen's vote. And when you include illegal aliens in the count for the purposes of distributing political power, then states like California and Texas, their votes in those states are worth far more than the votes in states such as Ohio or Colorado or West Virginia or Kentucky or Maine or Vermont, Alabama, Nebraska, South Carolina, Wisconsin, just go on down the list. And so if you're going to count illegal aliens in the census for the purpose of distributing political power, then you're quite clearly violating the 14th Amendment Equal Protection Clause and one man, one vote principles that have been the bedrock of our election system for many, many decades.
Right. So, but of course, you mentioned California and Texas, two very interesting states here, because I think voters there might right now argue that given the way the apportionment works and the cap on the number of congresspeople in the House, that their votes are actually worth a lot less right now.
Because illegal aliens have been counted in the 2010 census for the purposes of distributing political power. So California, by way of example, probably has three or so more members of Congress than it should. Same with Texas. In the case of California, it's because they are an avowed, either in whole or in part, sanctuary state, or with all of its cities that are sanctuary cities. They're encouraging this illegal conduct that in turn is giving them more political power in the United States House of Representatives and for the election of the President of the United States, vis-a-vis citizens of other states, and that's wrong.
Well, I mean, I guess the point I was trying to get to is regarding how those that apportionment then ultimately affects the Electoral College. But I take part of what you're saying earlier. I take your point. But there's one more thing I want to ask you, and then I'm going to bring our other guests back into this conversation. But Representative, you said a little earlier that historically the definition of persons in the United States has changed, but it has changed because earlier definitions thereof were to render people less than an entire person. I mean, as we know, 3/5 of a person, that's what Black Americans were in the eyes of the Constitution.
And that was a good change.
Right. So,
slavery in the United States of America was an abomination. And it's a shame we still look the other way with so much slavery that goes on around the world. I wish we'd be much more proactive, particularly when it comes to trade arrangements. When you've got slave labor, the United States of America should do much more than we are doing to minimize trade
in agreement
with those kinds of countries.
Totally,
but that's a different issue.
Totally in agreement with you. Look, slavery is bad wherever it happens. But my point is it sounds as if you here's one case regarding undocumented immigrants where you're advocating for a definition of personhood that would not include them. So once again, it's reducing what we see as a whole person in this country.
Someone who is here illegally should not be counted for the purposes of distribution of political power if you're going to abide by the Equal Protection Clause and the one man, one vote principles that underlie that clause. No citizen's vote should be worth more than another citizen's vote in the election of the President of the United States or in the election of members of the United States Congress. And that's going to be the battle we're going to have. I've heard the argument that you have made about the word persons. I hope you're hearing the argument that I have made about the Equal Protection Clause and one man, one vote principles. And some judge at some level is going to have to resolve the apparent conflict between the two. I hope that the Equal Protection Clause and one man, one vote principles will prevail. But of course, there are others who don't want that outcome.
Well, let me just turn back to our other guests here to get their views on this. Hanzi Lo Wong, NPR reporter on the 2020 census. Just your thoughts on the case, a little bit more about the case and what Representative Brooks is saying.
I just wanted to point out that the residence criteria that the Census Bureau has put out, published in the Federal Register, does say that citizens of foreign countries living in the United States who are members of the diplomatic community, they are counted at the embassy, consulate, United Nations facility, or other residence where diplomats live. I also think it's important to point out that there is a long, long history of past lawsuits that have tried to get unauthorized immigrants excluded from the apportionment count, a history that I've tracked back to the 80s that come from immigration restrictionist group known as the Federation for American Immigration Reform. They have filed lawsuits right before the 1980 census. They filed again before around the 1990 census. And those cases were dismissed in court, and there were no formal rulings on the actual merits of those arguments. But there have been various lawmakers over the years who have tried to introduce bills, amendments, and make similar calls. They have not gotten very far.
Well, Thomas Sines, Representative Brooks is highlighting the 14th Amendment here, the Equal Protection Clause, and saying that by counting undocumented immigrants, it violates the equal protection rights of voting citizens. Your response to that?
Well, I think that Mr. Brooks is mischaracterizing his own case. This case, to be clear, is not about citizens and non-citizens. It's about the undocumented only. There are many non-citizens who are not undocumented, lawful permanent residents, asylees, refugees. No one, neither the state of Alabama, nor Mr. Brooks, nor Donald Trump in his memorandum from Tuesday, is attempting to discount non-citizens. They're attempting to have an estimate of the undocumented population, a subset of non-citizens, backed out of the apportionment count. That's why this case has absolutely nothing to do with one person, one vote. Moreover, going back over 200 years, we have always counted those who are unable to vote, including those under 18, including the many, including half the population women, who were not entitled to vote when the Constitution was put in place, but nonetheless, they were to be counted as among persons in each state in the apportionment clause. Moreover, I would point out that the 14th Amendment that Mr. Brooks keeps citing, in fact, is where the Supreme Court has determined on multiple occasions that the word person includes undocumented immigrants. Indeed, in a 1982 case, Plyler versus Doe, the Supreme Court concluded that persons with specific regard to the Equal Protection Clause includes individuals who are undocumented. So there's absolutely nothing to support the contentions being put forward in that case. I did want to add, Magna, that the important piece of the case today in relation to Mr. Trump's memorandum is actually a cross-claim filed by the interveners represented by MALDEF against the United States. In the main case, Alabama and Mr. Brooks are contending that the Constitution requires that you discount the undocumented, and indeed to, in effect, put in place a zero-fifths rule for the undocumented. But what the cross-claim does, because we anticipated that the Trump administration would do exactly what happened on Tuesday, last October, we filed a cross-claim, which is like a separate lawsuit. It's called a cross-claim because it's by one defendant, the interveners, against another defendant, the United States. And that cross-claim contends that the administration may not voluntarily on its own decide to discount the undocumented. Even if Alabama were to fail in its suit, which is seeking to require that they be discounted, the administration could decide on its own to do it. We anticipated that, filed that cross-claim in October of last year. That's already in litigation. It will prevent this unconstitutional memorandum from taking effect.
If your litigation is successful in this case, right?
Yes.
Well,
there will be
other
other cases.
But you had, but the point you're making, you filed this cross claim many months ago, back in last October, as I heard you say. Now, Representative Brooks, I appreciate your patience here in hearing Thomas there. Do you want to respond to him?
Well, there are lots of things that I disagree with that has been expressed by, you know, I'm outnumbered here about 2 or 3 to 1, but I'm used to that on NPR and a lot of other stations and communication tools. But I do appreciate your giving me the opportunity to respond. I respectfully disagree with the interpretations, the legal interpretations that have been advanced. I'm an attorney. I don't know if the other gentlemen are. I suspect that the way they're presenting themselves, they probably are. But that's why we have this litigation in court. There are arguments on both sides. I hope that the federal courts will respect the Equal Protection Clause and the one man, one vote principles and not give any one citizen in, say, California 30, 40, 50% more power in the election of the President of the United States and of congressmen than, say, a citizen in the state of Ohio or the state of Wisconsin or the state of Alabama that I'm from. And if they do decide to give more power based on the conduct of illegal activity, well, that's unfortunate. I think that's wrong. We'll abide by whatever the decision is. But by golly, we're going to fight it in court to try to do the right thing and to minimize the adverse effect of illegal conduct on who controls the government of the United States. You know, let me give you an idea of where they're really headed with all this. You know, in San Francisco, anybody can vote. That means illegal aliens can register to vote in San Francisco. That means that lawful immigrants who are not American citizens can vote in San Francisco in their municipal elections. That means that we now have legally allowed, at least in San Francisco and some other communities where the folks that I'm speaking opposite of here, they want to allow foreign influence over the control of American governments. And that's wrong, and I'm going to fight that. I represent American citizens of all stripes. It doesn't make any difference what their race is, what their ethnicity is, what their religious values are. By golly, this is the United States of America, and we ought to allow American citizens to control our own government. And that's what I want to protect and preserve as much as I can.
Mm, just to fact check something there, Hanzi Lo Wong is a professional journalist, so I'm not...
Well, he presents himself well.
Who. Well, because he's a professional and has been following this story very closely and very professionally. And Thomas Sines is indeed a legal expert here. But look,
he also presented his argument well.
Well, good. We try to invite people who do just that, so that we can get a deeper understanding of these complex issues. Representative Brooks, I have one last question for you, and I was going to let you
ma'am.
Go, but I have one last question, if I could. You talked about preventing foreign influence in American elections. Do you bring the same passion to that fundamentally important charge to foreign influence regarding social media, regarding Russia, regarding China?
Absolutely. We should try to minimize that as much as possible, but let's also bear in mind what's good for the goose is good for the gander. The United States of America actively tries to influence the elections in other countries. We should not be surprised when other countries try to do the same thing in the United States of America.
All right. Well, Representative Brooks, I'm afraid we've got to take a quick break here, but I appreciate you joining us today. Mo Brooks is a representative for Alabama's 5th. We'll be right back. This is On Point.
Did you kill Marlene Johnson?
I think you're one of the first people to have actually asked.
From WBUR and ZSP Media, this is Beyond All Repair, a new podcast about an unsolved murder that will leave you questioning everything.
Somebody should be in jail for murdering my sister.
A woman who's never been believed.
As long as they think I have done this, then they're not looking for who actually did this.
And that's what makes it a cold case.
No, it's a botched case.
And a search for the truth, once and for all.
Wow, it just gets more interesting.
Beyond All Repair. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Be careful. You're digging in a place that's been very peaceful for a while.
Do it anyway. Dig.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We are talking this hour about the 2020 census, about President Trump's memorandum this week instructing undocumented immigrants not to be counted in census data when it comes to reapportionment of congressional seats next year. And I'm joined today by Hansi Lo Wang. He is NPR's national correspondent who is covering the 2020 census. And Thomas Sines also joins us. He's president of the Mexican American Legal Defense and Educational Fund. And we're getting a lot of response online to this conversation. For example, on Facebook, Christina Ruth is saying the census counts people, not citizens. Judy Walker, on the other hand, says they are here illegally. In some cases, we are giving them more rights than citizens. Over on Twitter, Susan Stroop says, one man, one vote. Well, who is counted in the census? Children cannot vote. So do we not count them as persons? Or what about felons who have been stripped of the right to vote? Being a citizen does not necessarily mean you can vote. Mr. Sines, I wonder if we could just jump back to something that Representative Brooks was saying at the tail end of the last segment, where he looked at San Francisco out there in California, where you are, and that I believe as of 2018, San Francisco decided to allow undocumented immigrants to vote in municipal elections there. And Congressman Brooks pointed to that as, I guess he was making the slippery slope argument. And just your response to that.
Well, it's quite clear under our Constitution that non-citizens cannot vote in federal elections. That's not going to change without a constitutional amendment. And as you've pointed out, San Francisco's effort only extends to municipal elections. So in state elections for governor, for state legislators, the vote is still restricted to registered voters. The slippery slope argument has nothing to it in this regard. It's quite clear that when it comes to the vote, it is restricted to citizens for federal elections. But again, this issue, as some of your listeners have pointed out in their comments, is not about voting. It is about who's counted for purposes of distributing seats in the House. And from the beginning of the country's existence, that has been based on a count of all persons, with the sole abomination of the three-fifths rule, ultimately eliminated by the 14th Amendment. But what that means is that multiple persons, in fact, probably a majority of persons when the country first started, a majority of persons could not vote, but they were still being counted for purposes of the apportionment clause. That has been our practice for 200 years. It is a reflection of what the framers intended. Their use of the word persons was intentional. And so it means that there's very little to support what Donald Trump attempted to do on Tuesday, or to support the contentions of Alabama and Mr. Brooks in the pending litigation.
Well, Hansi, I wonder if you had a last comment or a fact check on the Alabama case, because if not, then I'm happy to move back to the bigger picture about the 2020 census. But the Alabama case is so intricate that I didn't want to necessarily let anything, a stone unturned that we should turn over.
This is not necessarily related to the Alabama case, but just wanted to point this out. There is an additional clause that complicates all this history in the Constitution, the Indians Not Taxed Clause, which is in Article 1, Section 2. It's also in the 14th Amendment. And just to be very clear, by the 1940 census, the Census Bureau began attempting to include all Native Americans in the counts used for reapportioning seats in Congress, because by that point, it was under advisement from the Justice Department because of federal statutes as well as court rulings that Indians Not Taxed no longer apply to any American Indians or Alaska Natives living in the United States.
Okay, well, let's talk more about the census itself. Here is Tim Olson, head of field operations for the 2020 census, during a webinar organized by the National Congress of American Indians back in May.
But I will say, you know, we have passed the point where we could even meet the current legislative requirement of December 31st. We can't do that anymore. We passed that for quite a while now. So we're hopeful Congress will take action.
That's Tim Olson, head of field operations for the 2020 census. Hansi, what is he saying there?
Tim Olson is referring to a current legal deadline that the Census Bureau is under. It is required currently to report the final the results of the 2020 census, specifically the latest state population counts, to the president by December 31st. These are the counts that determine apportionment, what we've been talking about for the past hour. And these are the numbers that the Census Bureau has now said. Tim Olson acknowledged in May it's past the point. It was re-acknowledged earlier this month by the top official at the Census Bureau for the 2020 census, Al Fontenot, saying that we've passed the window. And in fact, in April, the Census Bureau announced that it was asking Congress officially to pass a law to extend that deadline for the apportionment counts by 4 months, as well as a deadline for redistricting data, more detailed demographic data that states rely on after each census in order to redraw state and local maps, voting maps. That data currently is due to the states by March 31st, 2021, the end of March. The Census Bureau says it can't meet that deadline either, needs 4 more months. And that is still an open question. Congress so far, you only see bills coming from Democrats in the House and Senate being introduced. No word that I know of so far from Republicans. And so it's unclear if the Census Bureau will get an extension. And that uncertainty is just another layer of complication at a time where, again, Bureau is dealing with a lot of complications because of the pandemic.
So, Hansi, just to be clear, if they don't get the extension, if the Bureau doesn't get the extension, what does that mean? That they would be submitting incomplete data?
I've been asking that question again and again and again of the Census Bureau, multiple officials, as well as the Public Information Office. I can't get a straight, direct answer. It is a very unusual situation. The Census Bureau says it wants to keep counting, it's planning to keep counting until October 31st, which is later than it originally was planning to. And counting to October 31st gives it not as much time as it has needed to process the information in order to prepare the results to deliver to the president. It's not quite clear to me exactly if the Bureau has enough time, even at this point, if they were to start processing the results they have. And again, remember, the national self-response rate is just over 62%. Not every person has been counted who lives in the country.
Well, Thomas Sines, so I suppose this is in the area of speculation here, which I'm usually a little reluctant to do, but everything's so topsy-turvy now. Help me think through this. Like, if the Census Bureau doesn't get that extension, as Hansi's talking about, and they have an incomplete count, I mean, so many decisions about where resources from the federal government are going to go rely on that number, on that count. Like, how would they actually, how would they get a complete picture of who's in the United States? Is there supplemental data that can come from anywhere? I mean, what would happen?
Well, unfortunately, the Bureau wouldn't have the time before December 31st to use administrative records or other supplemental data to help them with the count. That's part of the reason they've asked for the extension. You know, at a certain point, the law has to give way to practicality. And if the Bureau can't, because of the pandemic and the delays that it has caused, create an accurate count for apportionment purposes by December 31st, it's not as though the Constitution will come crashing down on the Census Bureau or the Commerce Department. It's not as though the Supreme Court is going to enter sanctions against them. What's going to happen is we'll have to wait until there is an accurate count. That deadline is wholly statutory. It's not constitutional. It's not a deadline that's related particularly to when states need to know for purposes of their 2022 elections how many congressional seats they have. So the delay that the Census Bureau has requested is reasonable. It's one that in practical terms, they will have to have. And so I expect that we will end up with a count more in April than in December. If they attempt to produce an inaccurate count in December, we'll be in litigation, and that will hold up the process until we can get a good count in April. That said, I think it's very important, as Hansi has indicated, that we get the Republican-led Senate, and we get Republican leadership across the board engaged in creating legislation to provide the extensions that the Census Bureau has not only requested, but now indicated on multiple occasions they absolutely have to have to do their job right.
Hansi, can you remind us what all is the things that are predicated on that census number, like just all the resources and the decisions that the federal government makes, in which they have to know how many people and where they are in the United States.
Well, beyond distribution of political power, we're also talking about an estimated $1.5 trillion in federal tax dollars that are distributed in part based on census data. This is funding for Medicare, for Medicaid, a host of other public services, including emergency response services that affect every community in the country. I think just one thing to point out here is that the Census Bureau has used in the past and is using for the 2020 census existing government records in order to inform specifically households that are possibly vacant, are difficult to count because of all the complications. And the Census Bureau also does use imputation, basically using statistics to try to figure out how many people are living in a home. And that use of imputation, the level of imputation that is used, may have to be higher in certain parts, certain areas of the country, if the Census Bureau has a curtailed amount of time to finish this counting. Right now, that's mainly they're relying on door knockers to try to do this in person, because the households that have not been counted yet so far are not likely to go online at my2020census.com, call a toll-free number, or mail back a paper form that's been sent to them.
Now, Hansi, you've reported before, though, that in the event of an incomplete data set, there are possible examples of what the administration has done before on where they look for information within government records, right? I mean, you reported that it was, almost a year ago that the president issued an executive order to use the Department of Motor Vehicle records and records from other federal agencies to produce some kind of anonymized citizenship data. Can you remind us about that?
Sure. Well, the Census Bureau has relied on various kinds of government records for decades, really, to help inform the information about certain population groups. So that's not new. What I have reported on recently let's go back to when the court struck down the Trump administration's efforts to add the now blocked citizenship question. Then President Trump issued an executive order directing federal agencies and trying to ask states to share with them government records about citizenship in order to help the Census Bureau's researchers try to come up with data that's more detailed than what the government currently has. Through a Census Bureau survey, known as American Community Survey, does have an estimate of the citizenship population in the country. Trump administration wants a more detailed count down to the block level, and it's asking the Census Bureau, because this court said you can't add a citizenship question, the Trump administration wants the Census Bureau to try to use government records to try to figure this out. And they have asked, I've confirmed and gotten agreement from four states that have agreed to share with them state driver's license as well as state ID records in order to help produce those estimates. And the important to point out here that the reason why the Trump administration says it wants to do this, one of the reasons, is to have block level citizenship data, which would allow state and local redistrictors, political map drawers, to draw voting maps at the state and local level of voting districts based upon not the count of every person living in a given area, but just citizens old enough to vote. So that would exclude children.
Really? Okay. So Thomas Steins, your response to that?
So we are suing to stop that executive order from taking effect related to collection of data on citizenship. Indeed, we had a hearing yesterday, and the judge in Maryland indicated that she would permit us to amend that case to also challenge Mr. Trump's memorandum from 2 days ago, because that would have an even more immediate effect on apportionment. The citizenship data is being created in hopes that states and localities would use it for purposes of redistricting. That's redrawing legislative and local districts to exclude, as Hanzi has indicated, not just non-citizens, but those under 18, to make districts equal in population based on voter population. I would point out that we know that DMV records are notoriously inaccurate about citizenship. Indeed, last year, the state of Texas attempted to move 100,000 voters off the rolls based on DMV records indicating they were not yet citizens. Texas was sued in multiple cases and ultimately agreed to stop that effort because DMV's records do not reflect when someone has naturalized, taken the steps to become a citizen. When you get a driver's license, you may be a non-citizen, and it doesn't matter. So you get a driver's license, then you choose to naturalize down the road. You don't have any obligation or any reason to inform DMV that you've now naturalized, because that has absolutely no effect on whether you're allowed to renew your driver's license. Mm-hmm. So DMV records are a terrible indicator. And that inaccuracy is part of the reason that we're challenging that executive order.
Interesting. Well, we've got about a minute left to go. And I want to circle back to one of the fundamental concerns here, and that is an inaccurate count. Well, incomplete and possibly inaccurate because people are afraid. I mean, we've got some tweets here. Someone calling themselves Feral Rudy Pierre-Louis Fee, who says, "I have not participated in the census and don't plan to because of the president's activities." I mean, Thomas, we've just got a couple of seconds left. Are we seeing a depressed response rate? I mean, what would you tell people who have those concerns right now?
We understand those concerns, but they should understand that federal law is very strong. It's as strong as it could be about protecting confidentiality of census data. In addition, we put together with the Leadership Conference on Civil and Human Rights and the Asian Americans Advancing Justice Organization a coalition of over 300 individuals and organizations who have pledged to step in if there is any violation by this administration of census confidentiality. We need to fill out these forms to get federal resources where they belong and to ensure that representation in Congress and in legislatures across the country fairly reflects our population.
Well, Thomas Steins, president of the Mexican American Legal Defense and Educational Fund, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
And Hanzi Lo Wong, national correspondent for NPR, who covers the 2020 census and is doing a fantastic job at that. Hanzi, thank you so very much.
You're welcome, Begna.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.